February 17, 2008, lecture discussion number 32 on Genesis 1 through 19. Remember, I told you I thought I would get done before 40, and it does look like we will. It'll only take 40 weeks to get through pretty much the first 17, 18 chapters of Genesis. What is the temperature in here, by the way? Can anybody see back there? I know. Is it too hot? I really want it to be too hot. What is it, George? I want to shut these people up once and for all. 70. Oh, come on now. That's pretty good. Anyway, I'm kidding about that, of course. Yeah. I can't wait for the summer. I'm going to have both boilers going. See if I can get it to 90 in here. Just say it so we could say we did it. Okay. As it's been the last two Sundays, we're not really in Genesis. We're in Matthew 24, actually. This is a tribulational prophecy. We are in a tribulational prophecy because we are looking at Lot and Sodom, and remember Lot's wife and the daughters and the fleeing and the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah as a tribulational picture. And so, and Christ actually makes that connection between Lot and Noah and Sodom in Luke as well. So we have this being the Olivet Discourse, Matthew 24, some of 25, and Christ answering three questions. And he's answering them out of order. Okay? If you were here the last week, I don't remember, they're all starting to run together to me now, but how long have I been doing Matthew 24? Is this the second or third week? I think it's the third week. Jesus answered the third question from the disciples first. The disciples asking three questions. He takes the third question and he answers that first. The third question was, what is the sign of the end of the age of the Gentiles? In other words, when are the Gentiles no longer going to be in authority over the nation of Israel? When is it that the Jews will be, in fact, in the place that God preordained them to be? And most scholars accept the age of the Gentiles as when Nebuchadnezzar came in. Now, the northern tribes got knocked out in the 700s, and Nebuchadnezzar comes through and finishes it all off and hauls Daniel, Ezekiel, back into Babylon, 586 B.C., and that starts the age of the Gentiles. That's how long it's been going. Now, it's been going on almost 600 years when the disciples asked this question, when are we going to get out of this age of the Gentiles? And Christ chooses to answer this question first. And that's not an arbitrary decision. It's always important to know or remember rule one. I had a caffeine-free soda. I left it in the freezer. Yes. I told myself, ooh, I'm going to get it cold. I'll just put it in the freezer. And it is still there, waiting for me. I don't think it'll blow up. No. I think it takes at least 3.5 hours. And so we had a half hour of music here. It's 11:10. I got 2-hour lecture. I eat one piece of chicken. No, okay, it's not a 2-hour lecture. I have plenty of time. I'm kidding. It's important to remember that Christ is omniscient God. He knows all things. It's important to remember that lecture, that lesson from Peter. Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? It has nothing to do about the word love. It has everything to do about him answering the question correctly. And Peter finally gets it right and says, you are omniscient God. And as soon as he does that, and we've had this discussion, if you decide that one of the omnis is there, all of them are there. So as soon as he says, you are omniscient God, he's also saying, you are omnipotent God, you are omnipresent God. So, remember, Christ is omniscient God here. So when he takes it and moves it out of order, is he making a mistake? No, he's not. So why Does he start with the end of the Gentile age question? Why start with this beginning of sorrows? That in itself is a very important key, because the beginning of sorrows is really the birth pangs. He starts with birth pangs with regard to the end of the Gentile age. You will see the birth pangs of the Gentile age when you see this particular sign. So you have to ask yourself, what is that sign and what's being born? And hopefully you've deduced by now that Christ doesn't make a mistake. He has in fact corrected the order of the questions. The disciples didn't ask the questions in the correct order, so Christ is correcting them, and he is answering the third question first, because the third question belongs in the first position. The third question belongs in the first position. Did I say that correctly? Okay, good, because I get confused. Now, the first question, he answers second. That tells you that the first question belongs in the second position, and the second question belongs in the third position. Does that start to make sense? It's been 3 weeks at this. Okay, good. He placed them in the proper order, and order is very important to God. First and foremost, he starts out with a seven-day creation. He has his Passover prophecy. He has this incredible order that he put into the Jews leaving the nation of Egypt. The firstborn dead on Passover, Exodus on unleavened bread, traveling 3 days and three nights to the Red Sea, crossing the Red Sea on first fruits, going 50 days and arriving at Mount Sinai, where he delivers the law. Now, that's of course, Pentecost or Shavuot or the Feast Day of Weeks. He has this feast day pattern that he's following, and its order is very, very important. Why? That's, of course, the Passover prophecy. I've told you many times that Christ followed that pattern to the day, to the minute, probably, when he went through his crucifixion week. And that's something that I promise I'll have to do again, because it's always the tables, folks. Sorry, we'll buy more chairs. There's some buffet stuff too, Kyle. You might as well grab that while you're there. Get a head start. Anyway. He has an order, and he's following his order. When you have a position that says he's not following his order, you should be very afraid of that. What's a classic example of him not following his order that's ingrained in the church today? Yeah. Friday crucifixion doesn't follow his order. He put this Passover order together. Friday crucifixion does not fit. That is a recent development in this country, especially. It came over with the Irish Catholics, as you know, with the potato famine. It did not exist when the pilgrims came here. They refused to accept a Friday crucifixion. They refused to accept a Christmas day in December, among other things. Anyway, order is very important. The birth pangs are going to come first. And the birth pangs, if you remember from a few weeks ago, is nation against nation. 1914, 1918 is when we saw the sign of the birth pangs. The sign that the end of Nebuchadnezzar, and what started with Nebuchadnezzar, is beginning to come to an end. That's nation against nation in Matthew 24. That's World War, our first World War, 1914, 1918. First historical World War. Most will say to you that the Second World War was a continuation of the first, so we really had one world war all the way to 1945. Excuse me. And that, Christ said, when you see world war, you are seeing the end of the Gentile age that started in 586. Some would say 700. Yes? What's that now? Yeah, no, the Shekinah glory leaving the temple does not signal Yeah, that's true. That's correct. And that, of course, happened right near the captivity. Ezekiel was taken into captivity, right? And he sees that on the river Kabar. But you're right. That starts the captivity, starts the Gentile age. The end, the birth pangs, or the beginning of the end, is when we have a world war. We have had a world war, obviously, so we obviously have had the beginning of the end of the Gentile age. How many of you are Gentile? Everybody, pretty much. There's a couple that may not be. It's come to the end. You're almost out of power. Sorry. That's a good thing, by the way. Next, he answers the first question second. And this first question was, when will be the destruction of Jerusalem, the slaughter of the Jews? And that's where we left off sort of last Sunday. And that's where our list is. Now, to repeat this, to kind of review this for those who weren't here last week or the previous week, Matthew 24, 9 through 28 causes great problems in the theological circles. And there's no surprise there. But it causes great, great problems for the prophecy teachers. And there are many, for example, who teach that the book of Revelation has already been fulfilled. That's a common, probably the most common teaching. Ned's over there nodding his head. Yes, it's the preterist view. In other words, the book of Revelation has already occurred, they will say to you. And that is a thought that, frankly, I am baffled by, but that's another lecture for another day. And that, again, is the preterist position. Essentially, the Revelation is a symbolic picture of early church conflicts that have already happened. That's what they teach. That is the dominant view in the church today. Matthew 24, 9 through 28 is very, very significant or prominent in this approach, in the preacher's approach. It is something that also is deemed to have already happened. And so it's necessary to address this a little bit this morning. It's a conflict, and you need to know it. There are essentially four, practically, from a practicality standpoint, there are more, but from a practical standpoint, there's four views on Revelation. There's the non-literalist view, and that is Augustine, that's the Catholic side, that Revelation is really a kind of a portrait of God versus Satan and should not be taken literally. It's pretty much poetry. And Augustine came to that position because he couldn't figure out what to do with all these scriptures with regard to Israel. Israel had been gone almost 300 years, and he said they're not coming back. They have been replaced. They must have been replaced, and they must have been replaced by the church. That's called replacement theology. And this dominated thought for hundreds of years, the non-literal view. Then the preterist came and said, well, this most of Revelation, most of Matthew 24, happened either at 168 with Antiochus Epiphanes, or it happened at 70 AD with Vespasian and Titus. But it's already happened. Then the historical came, and that was Martin Luther. And he said, no, Revelation is a picture between the leaving of Christ at his ascension and the second coming, and that but most of it has already occurred as well. And then, of course, is the futurist view. The futurist view says that chapters 4 through 22 of Revelation are prophecies not yet fulfilled. Okay? Future events. Literally true future events. Describing, essentially, the last 7 years that precede the second coming of Christ. That's the futurist view. It should, as I said, it should be noted that the non-literal and the preterist are by far the dominant positions on Revelation. So once again, your humble pastor is what? Yeah, he's in the great unwashed category again. Huh? I'm a futurist. I believe that Revelation is literally true future events. Okay? All of that to say that the interpretations of Matthew 24 follow these four positions generally. So when you begin to study Matthew 24, first thing you need to know is, are you reading a preterist, a non-literalist, a historicalist, or a futurist? Now, the most prominent futurist right now is probably who? You all bought his books. Well, Fruchtenbaum is one, but I'm saying Tim LaHaye is a futurist. Okay? The premillennial rapture position, that's futurist. So whenever you study Revelation or Matthew 24, you've got to know who it is you're studying and what they think. How bored are you right now? You still need to know. What is the song? Is there anything we know? Okay, it's gone now. I don't have a cell phone. That's not true. I do have a cell phone. Somebody gave it to me. They bought me 550 minutes. Is that right? I think I have 525 minutes left. I've had it for a year. Okay? They're evil. Cell phones evil. I don't know how I can say it any more clear than that. This one I charge, though. It is charged up. No one calls me. Does anyone know the number? See? Oh, do you really? Have you ever called it? Have I ever answered it? Did I answer it? There we go. I have a system. Watching them turn the cell phone off, I haven't accomplished that yet. I'm not sure I know how to do it. Okay. All of that to say the interpretations of Matthew 24 follow these four positions, and it's of great importance. And you need to understand it so that you can work your way through it. It's also, as I said, very important to know the order that Christ answers these questions. He discusses the destruction of Jerusalem, the abomination of desolation, after the world war sign. In other words, he says, you're going to see the world war sign, and then we will have the destruction of Jerusalem. We will have the abomination that makes desolate. And he identifies the tribulation after the world war sign. Okay? However, you're going to look in Luke 21, 12 through 19, and you're going to think that it is in conflict if you don't understand how the futurist, the literalist, the historical, and the preterist positions fit. You're going to look at that and you're going to say, wait a minute, this seems to be adding information to Matthew 24 that is in conflict with the tribulation coming after the world war sign, or the destruction of the Jews coming after the world war sign. The solution to that is that Christ does not, he mixes information specific to the apostles. He tells them what's going to happen at he's answering the age of the Gentile question. He is not answering what's going to happen to us pretty soon. He answers to the apostles what's going to happen to them pretty soon, but it is additional information to Matthew 24. So you have to look at Luke 21 and say this is specific to the apostles and it's not chronological, which means it's out of order. Does that make any sense at all? Is that a big huh? It will. It'll make perfect sense. It's necessary that you know that the information given to the apostles specific to them is placed out of sequence with regard to the world war sign, the tribulation, and the second coming. Okay? Whoa. There is heavy amounts of drool. Much mopping and disinfecting is going to be necessary. Okay, but you don't worry. It's just like this other stuff that I give you. I'll say it and say it and say it, and it'll come to you. This is, needless to say, very confusing challenge for the shallow student of Scripture to figure out the relationship of Luke 21, Matthew 24, Revelation 13, Daniel 9, Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians. Okay? So very challenging. Okay, where were we? Not ready to start the sermon now. God blessed them saying, be fruitful and multiply, fill the waters, let birds multiply. Genesis 1:22, Genesis 1:28, Genesis 9:1. By the way, there's seven Beatitudes in the book of Revelation. How many are in Matthew? There are eight Beatitudes. Some would say nine, but there's eight in Matthew. There are seven. Blessed. What are Beatitudes? Blessed are's. Blessed be's. There's seven of those in Revelation. Why did God want man to multiply? And not just multiply. How's it going? There's lots of man. He wanted lots of man. Billions and billions of men, women, children, mankind. Why that many? Why not stop at 80? What's the size of the church? 60. Let's stop at 60. Why billions and billions of them? And He not only wants it, He commands it. Go out and I not only want billions of people, I want billions of fish. I want billions of birds. I like birds, He said. I want so many of them, I just want birds everywhere. Why? Why not have something, what? Just imagine, I mean, I make fun of the Hinkies because I go up there and they have 3 horses and 7 dogs and 15 chickens. Okay, they don't, but they're headed that way soon. If you have an extra dog, extra chicken, or a goat, give it to Robin and her family. Would any of you want, I look at these dog mushers, they got 200 dogs. I mean, that's a lot of what? Yes, that's not what I meant. That's a lot of what? Maintenance. That's a lot of teaching. That's a lot of work. He wants billions and billions of living people. And He wants billions and billions of living animals. Billions of them. Okay? What was His point to multiply to this extraordinary amount? And He would know, wouldn't He, because He's omniscient, that as soon as the fallen angels, we've gone over this, as soon as they saw this explosion of humanity, that they would respond wickedly. So they saw this explosion of humanity as an opportunity and a threat to God. Is it a threat to God? No. Why does He want this incredible multiplying? It stunned the angelic host. What does this massive billions of human beings prove, plus all these billions of animals and the fossil record? We have billions and billions and billions of fossils now. So we have life everywhere. What else do we have everywhere? We have death everywhere. He wanted life everywhere and death everywhere as a consequence of sin. What is He teaching there? What is He saying when He's done this, when He wants this? First off, let's just assume you have an ant farm and you have 100,000 ants. How you doing? How's your... Let's give the church Sunday school project. We will have the 8-year-olds in charge of the 100,000 cockroaches. Who's signing up their kids? See, how many cockroaches are there? Might be trillions of them. Who's running it? God's running it. Who's running all the people? God's running it. Who's running all the birds? Who's making it all work? He's making it. He knows every bird that hits the ground. He says so. Bird hits the ground, I know it. How many birds are there? What's He saying by this, the magnitude of all this life and death? Okay? Consider that. Now back to our list. How does that fit in, you're asking yourselves? Well, it's here on page 13. But consider the magnitude of what is here on this earth, and then recognize how small the earth is with regard to the rest of His creation. Okay, our list. We put this on the board last week, and we have to read again for those who weren't here last week. It's always a good idea to read the text no matter what. We'll start at 24:3. because 24:3 is where the three questions are. Now, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things be? What will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" Okay? In other words, when will Jerusalem be destroyed, and the collateral issue will be, when will the Jews in Jerusalem be slaughtered? Because he says that the temple will be destroyed. And what will be the sign when you return and put an end, when you come to be king and start the millennium? And what will be the sign of the end of the age of the Gentiles? And again, he starts out with the age of the Gentile question. And he answers that first. So we're going to now cover again his answer to the first question, which was, when will these things be? That's the destruction of Jerusalem and the death of all the Jews that are in Israel, or most of them. And he answers that question second. That's the first question second. And that, of course, starts at 24:9. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you. Okay? After the wars come, that's the beginning of the end of the Gentiles. After the wars will come this time when they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations, that includes this nation, for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. Last week we talked about that. Who's he talking to? He's talking to Jews. He's talking to Jews about Jews in the tribulation. So many Jews will betray and will hate one another, and they will deliver each other up to be killed. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many, and because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. Obvious question, how many is many? But he who endures to the end shall be saved. We covered that last week. He who endures to the end of the tribulation will be saved. Not the end of your life. It has nothing to do about your salvation. It has nothing to do about that. It has everything to do about the Jews in the tribulations. The ones that make it through the tribulation will be saved from the Antichrist and the other Jews who are trying to kill them. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. Therefore, when you see this is a big deal. When you see this, the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, when you see this sign, 9:27 of Daniel, occur, it's time to do something. What do? When you see that, let those who are in, whoever reads this, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Go to the mountains where Lot ended up. As soon as you see this abomination of desolation, it's time to do what? Run. If you get there, what happens? If you run and you get to the mountains, what's the good news? Yes, you'll see. You're going to endure to the end, and you're going to make it into the millennial kingdom. You'll be saved. So, that's what he's telling them. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. How is he going to get any food? Yes, he's going to get food the way that God feeds the Jews before. How did he feed them before? Manna, that's right. Did they like it? No. They're going to like it this time. That's how he's going to feed them. How's he going to get water to all these people? How can God handle all these people? We're talking about 3 or 4 million. How can he? That's a lot of people. Think of the logistics. Think of the mail system. You know, how are we going to run the cell phone? How are we going to get the internet up? How's he going to do all this? Get a bunch of people. How's he going to protect them? Can he have, man, I mean, how's he going to protect them? How did he protect them last time? With a cloud. How did he feed them? He just dropped it out of the heaven, didn't he? It was a picture of himself. Out of heaven comes the food of life. Comes the bread of life. He taught them who he was. You beat on a rock, you kill the rock. That's where the King James is so wonderful. Moses killed the rock. Out of the dead rock came living water. The rock is Christ. That's what Paul says. Out of the death of the rock, out of the death of Christ comes living water. He'll handle it. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house, and let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. You don't need anything. How did he handle the clothing problem last time? He made sure it didn't wear out. He has a plan. Don't go back for your stuff. And by the way, are there Christians who have gone to Israel right now expecting to go through the tribulation and they want to be in Petra or Basra? Yes, we call them... Well, what do we call them? We call them raptured, is what we call them. But they're going over there. There's a whole group of them. They're over there. They're waiting for the tribulation. They saw the 1945 sign and said, we've had a world war. Next comes the tribulation. I'm going to be here. When I see the abomination of desolation, man, I'm headed for... And I'm going to make it. That's what they're doing it. You can buy tickets. There's a whole group. It's a moneymaker. Isn't it always? But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. Covered that last week. You're running. You're not necessarily slow, but you have something they want. And that's a baby. That's bad news. And pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath, for then there will be great tribulation such as not been since the beginning of the world. Key word there. Then there will be great tribulation. So I got tribulation and I got great tribulation. And he says that it'll happen then. It gives you time mark. What's the time mark when the great tribulation starts? What's the difference between the tribulation and the great tribulation? Do you know? Yes, I have the tribulation. The 7 years is divided into two 3.5-year periods. The second part is the great tribulation. That's when the really bad stuff happens. What's the really bad stuff? That's when the Jews all get killed. The annihilation of the Jews starts. Who's annihilating them and why? Who's annihilating them? Oh, the Jews are setting them up for betrayal and slaughtering each other. That's absolutely correct. But whose plan is it? It's the Antichrist plan, and he has who inside of him at the then mark? Because the then is the 3.5-year mark. That's the time mark. Who's inside of the Antichrist right now at then? Satan's inside. It is now the second time that Satan has gone inside a human being. Obvious question! Is it the same human being both times, or is it different guys? Anyway, I have the Antichrist filled with Satan. How smart is he? Very smart. How powerful is he? Very powerful. That is the condition you should always remember of Judas. Judas had Satan inside of him. Always remember that Judas was extraordinarily powerful and extraordinarily smart and extraordinarily wicked. So look at everything that Judas did carefully. Okay? That's coming up at a future time. For then there will be great tribulation such as not been since the beginning of the world until this time, nor shall ever be. And unless those days were shortened, let me read it this way, no Jew would be saved. Okay, you see me answering questions now? Unless that tribulation is shortened, every Jew's dead. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there, do not believe it. For false Christ and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you beforehand. What has he told you beforehand? Signs and wonders fool people. Therefore, if they say to you, look, he is in the desert, do not go out. Or look, he is in the inner rooms, do not believe it. For as the lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man. For wherever the carcass is, the body is, therefore the eagles or the vultures will be gathered together. Eagles, by the way, is the symbol for what two nations? I'm throwing this out as an aside here. United States, and who else? Roman Empire, and of course the Roman Empire moved up into France, Charlemagne, he was the Holy Roman Emperor, correct? And of course, it also went to the Kaisers, the Caesars. The Kaiser means Caesar of what? Germany. So the eagle was the symbol of the Nazi German government as well in World War II. And we have, what do we call the guys in Russia? Yes, which is another form of Caesar. So we have all of these evidences of the Roman Empire everywhere, and the eagles are the eagle is the symbol of the Roman Empire. So for many, many centuries, people interpreted this to mean that the Roman Empire has gathered around the body that is who? Ready to kill it. Israel. Okay? That was the common interpretation. Okay, we got to start at this last Sunday, and we picked off a few, as I said. We picked off the pregnant and the nursing, the inner rooms and the desert, and he who endures to the end will be saved. I did a little bit of that today. So probably we've got to restart somewhere. We got plenty of time because I'm going really fast. So let's pick one. Let's pick this one. Daniel 9:27. Let's go quickly and read Daniel 9:27 so that you know where it is. This is the sign of the abomination that makes desolate. This is the 70th week of Daniel. If that means nothing to you, all you need to know is that there are 69 weeks and the Messiah was cut off. And we have not, that's when Christ was crucified, and we have not had the 70th week of Daniel. There's actually, it's not a week, it's a seven. We have had 69 sevens, so we've had 483 years, and we need 490. We're missing the last 7 years, and that, of course, is considered to be the tribulation by those who have the literalist futurist view. Does that make any sense to anybody? It will. How long does it take? 10 years? We'll get there. I have time. Then he shall confirm a covenant. The Antichrist shall confirm a covenant with many. See that many again? Many shows up in both places many times. With many for 1 week. Okay? But in the middle of the seven, it's actually, he will confirm a covenant for a seven with many. But in the middle of the seven, he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering. In other words, he will shut down the worship system of the nation of Israel. And on the wing of abomination shall be the one who makes desolate, and even until the consummation which is determined is poured out on the desolate. So, when we cover Daniel 9:27, we know there's a sign of abomination. We compare it also to Revelation 13 and Daniel 12:11. We find out that the Antichrist, or some person, and I will say to you that it's a future event, so I don't have to keep putting the other ones out there, the Antichrist will go to the temple of Israel. Do we have a temple of Israel right now? No, we don't. What's in the way? An Islamic temple is in the way. It's probably in the court of the Gentiles. There's probably room to build an Israeli temple there. How long will it take them to build it? I don't know. Throw enough manpower and money at it, might knock it up there in a few years. But in the meantime, we have to deal with the fact that mosque is there. If that mosque disappears in the next couple of days, run up your credit cards, boys and girls. We is on our way out of here. We're no more framing. We're not finishing the rock work or the landscaping. But that temple's a big deal, because when that temple is there, the Antichrist is going to walk into the middle of that temple in the middle of the 7-year covenant, which will be at the 3.5-year period, which will be the what? The then, which is the great tribulation, and he will break that covenant, and he will start doing what? Killing Jews by the millions. When you see the abomination that makes desolate, when you see the Antichrist walk into the Holy of Holies, and what's in the Holy of Holies, in my view, I'm really going off on a limb here, it's my own personal view, I hate to give you my own personal view, but what's in the Holy of Holies? The Ark of the Covenant's in there. Okay, I think they find it. When they find it, they build their temple, they build their Holy of Holies. So the guys that made the movie kind of got it right. That's a special thing, that Ark of the Covenant. When we find the Ark of the Covenant, we set it inside the Holy of Holies, and then what do we wait for, Michael?
We wait for the Shekinah glory that left in Ezekiel 10 to come back and do what? Sit there. So who sits there instead? The Antichrist goes and sits there and effectively says what about himself? I'm the Shekinah glory. Now I want to know, does he make himself flame? I was making the joke to Big George. See, we really don't work very hard here, as you know. And I got it from this movie that Jim gave me. A white suit with mirrors on it. What a great idea. And then the sun will come through, right? Because it does. About when? June, when no one is here. And it'll shine on me and I'll go bright white. People will fall down, and while they're falling down, I'll have to go around and collect all the money. That's how it works. Whenever a pastor says, bow your heads and close your eyes, ooh, that's the name of it. And just like you would in a crowded room. I'm kidding. Sorta. Okay. Many, the preterists, say this has already happened. Antiochus Epiphanes, king of Syria, 168 B.C., went into the temple of Israel and sacrificed a pig. Okay? And some will say this is when Rome came in 70 A.D. and killed everybody. But 2 Thessalonians 2, 3 through 10 says this is a still future event. Revelation 13, 11 through 15 describes it as does Daniel 12, 11, as I said. Obviously, again, I'm taking the futurist view. So, the Antichrist comes in here and does this. He does it. That's the who of all of this. And he accomplishes the first stage of the abomination that makes desolate. Because the abomination of desolation has two stages. Stage one is the Antichrist coming in and being the Shekinah glory, or declaring himself, sitting on the mercy seat, in my view, and declaring himself to be God, the flame, the light, if you will. And he'll take control of the Jewish temple there, and that accomplishes the first stage. And Christ says, when you see that first stage, run. And don't go get anything. You don't need anything. If you go into your house to get something, what did you just do doctrinally? Yeah, you've said, hey, I got to have provisions. You don't need provisions. You don't need anything. Don't run back. If you say, I got to go back and get my kids, what doctrinal mistake have you made? Yeah, you made the Lot's wife mistake, but what do you just say? He can't take care of my household. They need me. Look, when you see the abomination of desolation, you ought to know. It's time to run. It's time to get where you're supposed to get. The second stage of the abomination of desolation is the false prophet. Back to Matthew 24. Is the false prophet and the Antichrist mentioned? Absolutely. Verse 23 and 24, Matthew 24. The second stage, the false prophet, he will make an image of the beast and place it into the Holy of Holies. So the beast, the Antichrist, will go in. And he will do this abomination, declare himself to be God. Then he will leave. The false prophet will come in and put this image there. Now, obviously, lots of questions about the image. Is it? And he will make the image, in Revelation, will teach us that he will make the image seem to be alive. And I go back and wonder, will it be a human face? Will it be fire? Will a voice come out of it like the burning bush? How will it be done? But whatever it will be a great sign. Don't think it'll be Disneyland with Abe Lincoln. Okay? Don't think it'll be a television screen. It'll be an extraordinary thing that he does. And he will fool people. Who will he fool? Jews. They'll think this is it. They'll think he's the Messiah. They'll think this is the Shekinah glory. And they will start hunting down the unbelievers. And they will betray them and help kill them, right? And that again, as we said, don't go into the desert. That's a trap. Don't go into the inner rooms. That's a trap. You would think the Jews would know all about the inner rooms. But many, many Jews and the world will be fooled by this incredible second part. And that, of course, now the two stages of the abomination is over. That's the sign to flee. That's the sign that the annihilation of all of the Jews has begun. And they will hate one another, betray one another. And the second half of the tribulation starts the last 3.5 years. And there's your then. Now, hopefully that clears up for you. 23 of chapter 24. Then, if anyone says to you, "Look, here is the Christ." Who's he pointing to? Somebody says that. Here is the Christ. Where is he pointing? Yeah, he's pointing at the Holy of Holies. Who's that? Yeah, that's not the Christ. That's the Antichrist. There, do not believe it, for false Christs and false prophets will rise. Will a false Christ rise? Yes, that's the beast that comes out of the sea. Will a false prophet arise? Yes, that's the beast that comes out of the earth. And they will do great signs and wonders. And what's the purpose of the great signs and wonders? To fool people into what? Being slaughtered. So, right now, we have what's called the signs and wonders movement. There are signs and wonders churches in this city. Right now. I wish they would read Matthew 24. The last thing you should ever call yourself is a signs and wonders movement. How ignorant is that? That is a sign of wanting to kill people, deceiving them. Note the deception that is tied to signs and wonders. That's what he's saying. Don't be fooled. He's talking to the Jews. I have told you beforehand. By the way, did the Jews know about this? Oh, yeah. There are the Menachem Begin, hope I pronounced his name right, would always have Christian prophecy experts over to talk to him when he was prime minister of Israel. He really wanted to know about Ezekiel 38 because he knew he was going to be attacked. And he wanted to know how that worked. After a while, you begin to see, once you saw the world war, by the way, this is also in Ezekiel. Once you see this sign coming, the Jews are starting to get a little excited because the end of the Gentile age is coming. But what's coming in between? Well, we're going to have this Ezekiel 38 army come down. He wanted to know how they were going to come, when they were going to come, and who was in it. Very important to Begin. Okay. The Antichrist and the false prophet. The beast from the sea, Revelation 13, 1 through 8. The beast from the earth, Revelation 13, 11, will show up here. And they will do great signs and wonders, and they will have others beneath them who they utilize. What's that sound like to you? That's the satanic triad. I have Satan in the position of the Father, not triune. By the way, why did he make the image and put him in there? Why not just leave the Antichrist there? In the Holy of Holies. Antichrist can't stay in the Holy of Holies. Why not? I got to put an image there that makes people think what? Yes, he's not omnipresent. He's got work to do. He's got people to kill. He's got a deadline. He knows he's got 3.5 years to go. He's busy wiping people out. By the way, why is he killing Jews? What's that accomplishing? Does he know what's happening? Does the Antichrist know what's happening? Does he know how much time he has? Does he know who's coming? Yes. Why is he killing Jews? What's he accomplishing by that? He's getting Jews to kill Jews by fooling them with signs. He loves the fact that I can get Jews, or that he can get Jews to kill each other. What a wonderful thing. Why is that so wonderful? It speaks to the motive and the plan of the Antichrist. But no, notice the triad. I have Satan, I have the false prophet, and I have the Son, or the Antichrist. So I have the Father, the Spirit role, and the Antichrist. But they're not omnipresent. They're a triad. They're not triune. He has to give the impression that he is omnipresent and that he is sitting on the throne, because that's where God would sit. In the meantime, he's doing other things. Where is he really? His image is in Jerusalem. Where is he? Baghdad. I just, all the time, I get people tell me about this, and you're going to hear some politics, about this worthless, useless war. No. we have attacked Baghdad. That is a good thing. It is a good thing to know how the end is coming. Anyway, the beast and the beast will rule, and they're going to kill, and they'll have tactics, and they fool people. And what are they accomplishing? Because physical death is not the goal of Satan. Chew on that for a while. Now, winter and Sabbath. Take the winter and Sabbath. Almost done. Where's winter and Sabbath? Right here. Here, let's take this on. Pray that it doesn't happen. Pray that the abomination of desolation doesn't happen in the winter or in the Sabbath. Because you got to flee. First thing I ask myself, can I run a car on the Sabbath? I mean, I just have a sign. If it happens on the Sabbath, it's going to stop people. Oh, I can't go. Got to hang around for 24 hours. Hope he doesn't kill me. The Antichrist care about the Sabbath? Is he going to pick a Sabbath day, by the way? What day is he going to pick? He's going to pick a feast day, isn't he? Which feast day is the Antichrist going to enter the temple and declare himself to be the Shekinah glory? All the feast days, which one's he going to pick? Passover is the number one choice by the theologians. Yom Kippur is in there. Trumpets is in there. Tabernacles is in there as well. Okay? Sinai is Shavuot. You can make a case for everywhere, all of them. But will he pick one of those seven feast days? Yes, he will. It's going to, in my view, be on a feast day. Are there any feast days in winter? No. When, by the way, did the Jews flee? They got to flee to the mountains. Have they ever fled before? When did they flee? Out of Egypt. What day did they flee on? Unleavened bread. Antichrist going to set himself up on unleavened bread or Passover, and then they flee on unleavened bread? Are we going to see that? Is that the order? Except those days be shortened, not would be saved, but they will be shortened. And those who endure to the end will be saved. And where are they going to be? They're going to be, they ran to the mountains, Basra. Petra, it's called in the Greek. And that's where Christ is, as the musicians come forward. Because he says, for wherever the body is, there the vultures will be gathered together. And so that interpretation carries the most weight. Here is Petra. The Antichrist has destroyed Jerusalem. And he is on his way. He's surrounded Petra where the remnant is. And he is ready to kill the remainder of the Jews. He's killed them all up to here. He's just got to kill these. Okay? And they asked him, where are you going to be? He said, don't look in the desert. I'm not in the desert. Don't look in the inner rooms. That's where the Antichrist is. I'm going to be at where the remnant Jews are. And they will not be destroyed because they that endure to the end will be saved. By who? By me. That's what he says. And so the vultures, or the eagles, if you will have them surrounded. That isn't good news for them. That's where Christ is. And they will cry out, the Jews in Petra, for him whom they pierced, Zechariah 12:10-12. And they will say a bunch of things. They will say what Peter said when he's on the ocean or on the waters. They will say, save me. They will say, they will mourn him whom they know now is God. They will say, cry out, Father, Father, why have you forsaken us? And his answer is, I haven't forsaken you. I'm about to get rid of some vultures. Then we have an 8-stage battle of Armageddon that starts there. Let's rise and be dismissed.